You're on the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yay! Back to talk about a cheery, sunny, optimistic film.
Yeah.
Yay! A House of Dynamite.
Oh, yes. Catherine Bigelow's A House of Dynamite. Netflix is entrant into the Oscars conversation, though I don't think it'll make it that far.
Yes, I do fear that is probably the case. This movie came out, where did it debut? At Venice, at the Venice Film Festival. And I think it got fairly good reviews in Venice. I saw it at New York Film Festival last month. But yeah, this is Catherine Bigelow, who, for those who have forgotten, she directed both The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty.
Both and Detroit,
she directed Hurt Locker, which won Best Picture. She directed a bunch of sort of like thrillery kind of movies before that, and then she directed The Hurt Locker, which got Best Picture. She directed Zero Dark Thirty, which got a bunch of Oscar nominations. That's the one about them catching Osama bin Laden, and Jessica Chastain is in it. That came out in 2012. Then in 2017, she had Detroit, which I never saw, and which I like did not. It sort of like came and went, I feel like, without much fanfare. But you saw it?
I would say there was fanfare, but it was mainly just like flaming hatred for it. And I saw it. I thought it was really, really powerful. But then I stepped back and I did see a lot of fair criticism about this white director taking on a truly horrific case of police brutality and kind of prescribing it to some bad apples instead of the systemic problems of the time and, you know, the brutalization of black bodies for entertainment. And so, yeah, it did not, there was a lot wrong with it, especially with it being her vehicle as a white woman who tends to be more, I don't know. There's been some questions of like her sort of post 9/11 kind of hoorah American exceptionalism. So I think Detroit coming after Zero Dark Thirty, which some people were like, is this kind of pro torture? It just, there was some bad blood for sure.
Yeah. And that movie did not get any Oscar nominations or awards attention. And so when A House of Dynamite was announced, you know, Netflix has it. It has this big cast full of people, which will that were like, oh, is Catherine Bigelow back? Is this her like, is this her big sort of like return to the awards conversation? Because she hasn't really had an awards movie since 2012. So, you know, like this
and
is a long time
movie
coming.
Since
yeah, she hasn't had a movie since 2017. So, yeah. It was, it's been a long road, I guess, for her to get this made. So I was, and after, again,
well, actually, this was a very fast creation for her and her. She had the idea of like, how does it work when our government sees a missile coming or whatever? And then she tapped Noah Oppenheim to write a script. And they very quickly, she said they like drafted it in 2 months. So I'm sure the movie process took time just to like build the set and finesse the details and whatever. But in general, this actually came together creatively very quickly, for better or worse.
And you can sort of tell. Noah Oppenheim wrote such hits as
Your Beloved.
Well, Jackie,
Your
yes.
Beloved.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's lead with your
okay.
favorite.
That, but then also The Maze Runner.
Yes, Beloved.
And the Divergent series Allegiant. So, you know, we're really working with a strong it's like, is this exactly the person whose hands we want to put this premise into? Unclear.
I do think he has some political reporting background is the thing. Because yes, he used to work for, what, MSNBC or something?
Yes, like the Today Show and NBC News.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, NBC News, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's not like pulling a YouTuber off the streets and being like, write a political thriller. He did have some knowledge, which is why he was tapped. And you know what? I'll say it on the record. I liked this movie. I'm sorry. I did. I liked it.
Okay, well, before you say that, let me say this bit, which is that Ronan Farrow claimed that Oppenheim attempted to stop his reporting on the Harvey Weinstein sexual abuse cases.
Yeah, I did hear that. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yes. So, I heard the good buzz about A House of Dynamite. I went into seeing it at New York. And I was sort of stunned by what it is a movie. It's not what I expected. And I don't really know if it works. I think that there are some people who really do think that the sort of premise of it works. Yeah. And there are some people who do not. What it is a, it's a vast ensemble film that sort of goes over this same like 15-minute time period. 18 minutes, sorry. Three times. However, it's not like time accurate because the movie's obviously longer than, you know, an hour or however long that would be. But it's what happens if a nuclear missile is headed towards America and America sort of like doesn't quite know where it's coming from or what its purpose is, and then how it handles that in, do we launch a counterstrike? Do we, you know, how do you shoot the missile down out of the sky? Like, just what are the sort of steps that happen in between, oh, there's a missile coming to the US, a nuclear missile, and, you know, however that eventually ends. Mm-hmm. And it goes through the same series of events three times, each time looking at like a slightly different group of people. Mm-hmm. So I think there's probably like five sort of characters that are the main characters in each set. And so it's like people who work in intelligence, and it's mostly like political, military related people. And then they're like family members sort of as well.
Yeah. It's the war room, and then it's Stratcom, Strategic Communications, and then it is the president.
Yes. But while that is happening, you're getting all of these different people in different places who are sort of being looped in, whether they are at like an Alaskan missile base or they're taking the day off because they're at Gettysburg with their child and having to phone in, or the president is at like a WNBA like shooting thing, because, you know, it's just like a normal day. So everybody's kind of like going about their business and then have to get looped into this. Military sort of strike. And it's a little bit like Vantage Point in that.
Technically. Yep.
Yes. And, you know, in Vantage Point, you see the same series of events from, I think, like six different views. Mm-hmm. And so each time you're getting a different perspective with different information. This is not exactly that, because you're getting groups of people rather than individuals. And so there is like, you know, the president is in the first, you hear his voice in the first two groups, although it's not really revealed to be Idris Elba, and you don't get to see what he's actually doing until the third group comes up. Or who's the guy from Mad Men? Jared Harris is also like, Jared Harris and Tracy Letts are both sort of like these bureaucratic people who are, again, on the calls in all three groups, but you don't really see until later. I can't remember which one their focus is on. I think Jared Harris is in the last group. I can't remember if Tracy Letts is in the second group.
Jared Harris is in the second group. He doesn't make it to the third.
Okay.
Well, because the third is mainly the president. So you have the, because it's all taking place on a Zoom call, basically.
Right. And yes. So,
You hear everyone on everything, but for the president, he's off camera. And so most of the third act is just Idris Elba and then whoever he's with in person.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, but, so you see then, Jared Harris.
Yeah, and then go backwards. The second one is mainly the military. So you have the Secretary of Defense, Jared Harris, and you have the other, the old white trigger-happy general dude who's head of STRATCOM.
And the second group is also the one with the sort of like interim guy who's like running from his car.
Yeah, the poor,
yes.
The dude, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I watched this movie kind of sight unseen. I didn't look into it at all. I just pressed play because you told me to. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really thought-provoking and interestingly framed. And I knew, like, you know, the ending happens. It's a very controversial sort of ending. It does not play into your Hollywood sort of, you know, you don't see an explosion. You don't see the aftermath. It's very, 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 very specific in what it wants to do. And that worked for me. And so I was pretty surprised, like, reading the reviews afterwards, because this did not work with the audience at all. Like, yeah, it's done okay critically. I think generally, like, critics, you know, it has, like, 75% on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever. But it has, like, a 1 star on Google. It has, like, 3 on Metacritic. Like, the audience does not like this film. And I was reading through some of the Rotten Tomatoes, like, comments and stuff. And I just think, yeah, like, not to say people didn't get it, but I just don't think it worked. Like, I don't think people, for whatever reason, for better or worse, like, I just think it didn't connect with an audience beyond me, probably.
I do. I mean, when I was watching this and when I suggested it, I was like, oh, I do think this is going to be one of those movies that I don't like and Shelby likes because it is miserable. And I was like, I know Shelby always loves these like nihilistic kind of things.
It is not nihilistic. But you know what it is. You know, okay, go ahead.
No, you say your bit and then I'm going to sort of switch topics.
I was going to say, I think what helps is that I like, you know, I love a disaster film, and so much of a disaster movie is like, what would you do in this scenario?
Yes.
And that's literally what this movie is, just like ad nauseum. It's just like, what would you do? And I also think it's very anti-American. I think it could have.
Oh, yeah.
I think it could have pushed further. I think some people's criticism is fair that it sort of like still takes this approach of like, there are good people in the government who would also be clutching their pearls at this experience. And it's like, whatever. Yeah, I can see the argument of maybe they should have, you know, it's still pretty, whatever. She has a very specific lens. It's obviously very American centric because it's about this very specific thing of what would America do after making this arsenal of nuclear weapons in a post-Cold War? Like, what is that like? And so, yeah, I find it like a very compelling argument for like how fucked we are and how dumb our country is set up to deal with a sort of situation like this. So the nuance of it was so fascinating to me because it is like, it's not only dealing with like people having to react. It's like the way the system is built is just inane. Like, it's just like, that is a crazy series of steps to take in this like 18 minute window. And so all of that was like very, it was feeding my brain of like, oh my God, like how would this work? What would happen? What would I do if my daughter was in Chicago and I knew that there was no saving her? I wouldn't like tell her that the nuke was coming. I would just like try to say, I love you, you know? And so like all those little like human moments were so interesting and invigorating for me. But then on top of it, it was also like, it's just like a giant what if, and it's mainly a middle finger to the powers that be. So I think that helped my watching experience. Was I was less concerned with like what happens to America post nuclear war, you know, like it wasn't like I needed to see the explosion. It was very obvious with the first chapter break that we would not see an explosion, that this would not turn into some sort of like Armageddon survival thing. And so then it just became a fun thought exercise.
I thought we might end with like sort of a melancholia kind of ending where, or like even a Don't Look Up ending where you like know what happens, even though, but sort of going back, I think that the reason why this did not, why people don't like this is partially due to the marketing. Because you do think that this movie is going to be a sort of, you know, end of the world, like political thriller. And I think if you're I think if like someone's dad or whoever is going into this thinking it's going to be that, it's like, that is kind of the vibe, and I can see why you're selling it that way, but it's a lot like artier and sort of like weirder in its construction than just, and it's not, and it doesn't really have like a satisfying, you know, like ending.
There's no because hero, yeah.
Well, and the whole time they're trying to figure out, where did this missile come from? Like, who sent it? Why did they send it? Was it an accident? Was it on purpose? Like, did the Russians send it? And I think that if you're someone who cares about a thriller, you're like, oh, well, at least we'll get to the bottom of that sort of mystery, which you don't. So I can see why, like, if you're watching this movie and you're watching this sequence of events play out three times and you still don't get an answer, if you're not someone who's like, oh, who is thinking about this as like, oh, like this is a thought provoking film that's playing with form and getting me to think about things by not giving me the answers that I want to. Like, like if you're not that kind of person, then yes, you're going to be like, wait, this movie pissed me off. Let me go give this a 1-star review. So I think that is part of the issue. But again, like Netflix bought this, I'm sure put a halfway decent amount of money into it. The cast is stacked with people because basically like, not that everybody in this is famous, but it's like most everybody is at least kind of famous. Yeah. It's like Idris Elba, Rebecca Ferguson, Jared Harris, Tracy Letts, Anthony Ramos.
Caitlin Dever shows up for literally 30 seconds.
Jason Clarke, Greta Lee, Willa Fitzgerald, Renee Elise Goldsberry. Like, it's so many kind of famous people. And I think, again, from, like, watching the trailers and stuff, you kind of don't understand that most of these people are only in, like, a third of the movie. And of that third, like, most of these people were probably on set for, like, a day, if not less.
Yeah. I mean, Greta Lee won an Oscar, and she's in this movie for 3 minutes tops.
Yeah.
But great. Yeah.
So character. I think that's why like a lot of people did not appreciate it or give it its due. I think that there is a very interesting movie in here. I think that the format of this does not work. Like I
really liked the format though.
I think that if you got this story of like, okay, there's this missile coming and what do we do? And like, let's say it was like an hour long or like the timeline was like, okay, we have 2 hours until it gets here or what, you know, whatever. And you were following one timeline rather than following the same timeline three times. I think that works better. I also think this works better if you want to do the multiple timelines. If you do the multiple timelines, but then stick on one person in each timeline rather than this like ensemble, because the thing was, is that some of the pieces, yes, in the second and third acts provided new information, but some of them didn't really provide new information. And so it did feel like you were watching like basically the same sequence of events unfold three times with very sort of like small additions. It did not feel to me like Vantage Point, where every time it switches, you feel like you're getting another chunk of intel. And then also, I just think it's impossible if you're writing a script to have this many characters and make us feel something for all of them, which the movie was doing. So basically, every person in each one of these three groups had to have like another family member or somebody who was not in the government, who they had some connection with.
We're all of us children of mothers and mothers of children, you know.
And if something is bad that's going to happen to them, then it's going to happen to my child. Yes.
I just think it's like, I get the criticism, but I actually liked the Russian nesting doll of it. I liked the repetitiveness. One, because it allowed for these sort of like, I don't know what to call them, like not Easter eggs, but like in the first scene, there's like in the first chapter, there's like a sudden noise screaming and then there's a cutoff and you lose someone on the call and you don't find out why until the second chapter. And then you see it happen and you're like, oh shit. And then I don't know. I also felt like it was interesting to see how, I think it was intentional in how each chapter you kind of shrunk the circle of deciders, because the first one is the biggest ensemble as far as like the voices in the room, and Rebecca Ferguson is leading it, and so there's a lot going on, and it's obviously the best chapter because it's like the most tense. You don't know what's happening and you don't know what's coming. And so, yeah, some of the momentum is lost in the second and third chapters. But then I also feel like there was such an interesting layering of having the deciding force tick down until you're left with Idris Elba, who's like a new president, who's like, I was literally never trained for this. And now I'm deciding if we're going to start the nuclear holocaust or not. And I found that a telling layer in how our bureaucracy is set up as well, where the closer you get to the decision makers, the less informed they actually are, you know? And you have all these little minions who are very well trained and well versed in what to do and how to do it and all of this. But as you go up the like pecking order, that expertise gets more and more lost. And I don't know, I found that in itself a mesmerizing sort of like way to end it, is with this little, you know, this leader of the free world who's like, what the fuck am I supposed to do here? Like, this doesn't make any sense. And he just wants someone to tell him what to do. And there's no one to answer his call, literally. And so, like, I think it worked stylistically, or I mean, on paper. But I can see why it doesn't necessarily lend itself to being an enjoyable watch.
Yeah, like, I think that there are ways to do that, just to do it better. Like I think that the Rebecca Ferguson character and watching her and sort of like her like handling this war room and being like, go get my phone from the other room, I need to call my family. Like, I thought that was really compelling. And I think maybe even if this was just sort of like her and then, I don't know, like Jared Harris and the president and Idris Elba, like it was just the three of them, their stories, that would have made it cleaner and we could have like gotten more in depth with them.
That's just not how it works, you know?
It's just, yeah, like, but it's just like, but it's just like, I didn't need like every person sort of having like a, oh, like here's them kissing their girlfriend before they go off to work. And then, oh, like now I have to try to call my girlfriend while my phone is busy. It's like, I just saw that same, like variations on that same scene with every single character. Yeah. And by the time I got to the third group, like I was sort of like, I think the thing is that because of the groupings, by the time I got to the Idris Elba situation, we'd already seen the story twice and we kind of knew what was like how the events were going to unfold. The only thing that we didn't really know was what the ending was going to be. Yeah. So when you're in that third group, I'm kind of like, okay, yeah. Like, yes, okay, we know. And then you're going to talk about the building and blah, blah, blah. Like, let's get to the end because that's the new piece of information that we want. And then when you get there and you don't get that piece of information, it's just like, I think that there's ways that you could have constructed this somehow to make it more, I don't know, just to like make it work better. And I think you could have still done some interesting things with the format of it. I just don't think that this really serves it that well. And I think that's, and I think the fact that, you know, they wrote it so fast or whatever, like kind of speaks to that of like somebody had the idea of like, oh, we should do it like this. And they were like, yes. And they didn't like finesse it as much. Because I also think if you're going to do three versions of this, you need to do it like the opposite kind of, you need to switch them around where it's like you have the president first who kind of doesn't know what's going on and is just getting looped in. And then as you go, you get more information rather than getting less information.
Mm-hmm. No, I disagree. Like, I really do think that this works what she's trying to do. It's not like the way she's talked about it is that she's not necessarily making like an entertaining film, right? Like, obviously all film is meant to entertain and, you know, provoke thought, whatever, blah blah blah, but like this was meant to be a painful, uncomfortable viewing process, because to her she's like, I grew up doing the duck and run drills or whatever. And then she said, what did she say? She's like, I feel like nuclear weapons have become normalized. We don't think about it. We don't talk about it. And yet it's unthinkable. And she's like, so I wanted to move it to the forefront of people's lives. And so the layering, the repeating is literally hitting you over the head with like, this doesn't get better. There's not someone you can rely on to make the right choice. Everyone in every single room is just like a fucked up ego who's, you know, it's a coin toss. It's a coin toss on how this plays out. And no matter how you cut it, it's going to suck. And we've all just accepted this and we don't talk about it anymore. And we just think like, oh yeah, Cold War's over. We figured it out. But it's like, no, like this sucks. This sucks that there's so many nuclear warheads on this planet, all between like 10 countries, all of whose treaties are running out of time. And it's like, yeah, this could be happening. And it's like, do you trust the people who are handling this? Like, do you even know how it should be handled? And so I think this movie, in showing the layers of like, quote unquote, the process, the like, oh, we planned for this. This is our $1 billion, you know, metric for handling this scenario. We've had 100 years to kind of formulate. It's just like, no, it's bullshit. Like, we're not that protected. And I think the repeating of it and the urgency building as fewer and fewer people are the ones to get to make the final call, it's like, yeah, you're shit out of luck. Like, that sucks.
I don't think you can say like, oh, well, like it's a bad situation in real life and it's sort of uncomfortable. So therefore I'm going to make a sort of like bad, mildly unwatchable movie that is like going to reflect the thing that's happening. Like, I think that there's a way where you can get all of what you're saying across, but also make it like not, Don't Look Up is obviously a very different movie and trying to do different things. And I think better and worse in different ways. But I think at least with that, I think the structure of it like works better, where you do see that the government is ineffective, and that's obviously not a nuclear situation. That's an asteroid or whatever is coming to the city. Uh-huh. But like the stress of that is that like there is a ticking clock that is known to you as the audience and is known to some of the characters, and that other characters like are not acknowledging, and so you are getting more stressed out because you're like, why is nobody doing anything about this? Where in this, I felt like the stress, I felt the most stress watching this movie and the most uncomfortable during the first third. By the time we got to the third, I was sort of just like bored, which I don't really think is what
I want
as the message.
But I feel like it says more about audiences today than it says about this film. I just think we're kind of the brain rot, you know, like this like need to be entertained and this need to be to hit all these usual like narrative points. It's very like, you know, elementary. And I'm not trying to like go, like I'm not trying to say that this is like the best film of the year and it deserves more than it's getting. I like can see the annoyance of it as a film, but I do feel like it's maybe, I don't know, like overly criticized for its form.
Yes.
Like the idea that the third act gets boring. It's like, well, then I don't think you were really engaged in it in a really good faith kind of way. Because if all you're looking for is more information, then yeah, you'll be disappointed because you don't get the quote unquote answers. But I do think if you're like leaning into the character piece of it and the sort of like, what would this be like? Then there's enough in each chapter to make it, at least for me, I felt very fascinated and engaged by the little moments of humanity, the different roles, the different people and players, and like how that amplifies and distresses the situation, and like all of that was enough for me to be like, oh, this makes sense, and this is like there's a character study happening here that I will allow the repeated information, like, you know. And so yeah, I guess I can't speak to how intentional that choice was, like, or if they thought they were just making a really exciting third act, Because it definitely did slow down, and Idris Elba as a president was sort of like, okay. But, you know, I also did catch myself thinking a lot about the, like, most laughed at line, which is when Idris Elba is like, I heard on a podcast once. And then he quotes the name of the movie. And at first I was like, well, that's just, like, lazy. That's pretty funny. That's, like, a funny throwaway line. And it's a real podcast, and it's a real quote, so they had to attribute it to the real, like, they couldn't just write, oh, we're living in a house of dynamite, and think they came up with that originally. So it was sort of, like, funny. But then it also made sense for this president who's, like, again, circling back to all politicians are sort of just, like, celebrities without real expertise in what they're asked to be experts in. But it makes sense that a president's, like, pulling from the same sort of, you know, media that we're all engaged with, and that he's admitting he didn't get any training in this, and yet somehow he's the leader of this intense 18 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so all of that was, like, fascinating enough for me that I do think that there was intention behind it and an attempt at making those, that sort of repeated narrative work. And I think it just came down to some audience responded to it and some didn't. But I don't think it's like the movie would have been better if they'd stripped it of that gimmick. Like, it felt like it added to it for me.
Well, I kind of don't know what, like, they would have need to added more.
It would have been a different movie.
It would have had to be longer or something if they got rid of it, because, like, they, you know, you can't stretch 18 minutes. Like, they stretch, they already were stretching 18 minutes to, like, a half hour in each of these, rather than, so it's like, you can't really, like, stretch 18 minutes into an hour and a half or however long you want the movie to be. Yeah. And I definitely think that there's, like, there's a group of people who don't like this movie, and they don't like it for not the same reason that I'm not a, like, I think, I think there's, like, a sort of guttural, like, well, this movie didn't give me what I wanted, thing that I'm like, okay, no, I don't agree with that. But even with, like, you were talking about the character development, like, because we get spend so little time with each of these characters, like, they try to pack as much in there as they can by, like, sort of using caricatures and, like, having them have conversations with their, like, whoever their closest, you know, like, non-government person is. You know, it's like, okay, the president has to call Renee Elise Goldsberry, who's in Africa on a safari, you know, so that we can, like, learn a bit about him. But I think, like, either whether you make it less characters or rearrange it or something, I think that then it gives you, like, more character development. I do like the aspect of, like, okay, what would you do in this situation? And kind of giving us the different varieties of that, whether it be, like, okay, you're sort of, like, in disbelief, or you're sort of, like, trying to immediately jump ship, whether you're trying to get to one of these, like, safe haven bunker places, or you're jumping off the side of the Pentagon because you just want to die. Mm. Like, I did sort of like that in a, oh, if the world is ending, like, you are going to get a lot of different people who have a lot of different priorities, and some of those are going to be helpful and some of those are not. And it's, and when you're getting that close to the wire, you can't really rely on any of these people to, like, follow through and do what they're actually supposed to be doing, because it's like, oh, well, this is a hard choice. So if, you know, you realize you only have 5 minutes left in the world, are you going to, like, monitor something, or are you going to call your wife? Like, you're probably going to call your wife. So I think that my frustration is sort of, like, I think that there is a better movie lurking in here. And I feel like, you know, if you're going to make a movie that's about the nuclear arms race and the fact that, yeah, we are all sitting on these, like, nuclear stockpiles, and that they have the potential to completely eradicate life on Earth, for them, or, you know, like, leave these people living in these, like, bunker situation, like, just, like, hellish things of, yeah, like, we should be thinking about that. I mean, I was thinking a lot watching this about the TV show Chernobyl that came out, you know, 5 years ago or whatever, which I think we did an episode on, maybe. And how that was just one nuclear reactor that malfunctioned, and they sort of were able kind of to get it under control, but that was a very sort of, like, touch and go situation. And that And that was kind of like in the middle of an area that it was sort of like not that populated. Like there was just a lot going on there. And that was one thing. And I felt like, you know, because that was a TV show, they got a lot of time to go into the different sort of like aspects of how right. much that screwed, how much the inept government and like just bureaucracy like made that happen. And then also all of the lives that it impacted and all the people who died from it, because basically like a couple people wanted raises in like Soviet Russia. So they were trying to like push things through that shouldn't have been through rather than pay attention to safety protocol. And so I just was like, okay, if we're only going to get something about nuclear, you know, warfare every however many years, like I wish that it was something that had, I don't know, that like had a little bit more to it than this, which the vast majority of people are going to watch and complain about. And even the people who like, I guess I just wanted more from it. However, I did feel like the Jared Harris character being like, oh yeah, I'm just going to like commit suicide right now. Like that's an easy enough solution. I'm like that was the correct maneuver. Like after watching the movie, I was like, yes. And that was the choice that needed to be made.
It was really effective. I thought that was really like, I didn't see it coming necessarily. And
yeah. And I do not want to live in a bunker. That sounds terrible. When they were like, oh, we have all these, like, yeah. We specifically picked all these people to keep the government running underground. It's like, why do we care about keeping the government running? Like, well, what? Yeah. Like, yeah. Just if the options are like, oh, I have to live 70 years underground in a bunker to keep the U.S. government going, or the U.S. government dies, it's like, okay, yeah, I think we can just all let the U.S. government go. Which I was also sort of thinking about from the perspective of Idris Elba, because the choice that he has basically at the end of the movie is that they don't know where the nuke came from, if the nuke is going to detonate, like what the situation with that is, and they've tried shooting it down and that didn't work. So, and it's only one nuke and it's headed toward Chicago. So he can either let the nuke take out Chicago and hope that it was sort of like an accident or whatever and deal with that, or he can launch like a full-on missile strike into Russia and China and, you know, these other places to just like decimate everything just to make sure that a second missile doesn't come to the United States. And I was like, does anybody really want to live in a world where it's like everybody's dying of radiation poisoning constantly? I'm like, that seems worse than just dying in a nuke. I'm like, if I'm living in America and the president has the option to just let me die instantaneously in a like a nuclear warfare, or I have to survive that and then watch everybody die of radiation poisoning, it's like kill me.
Wait, so you're saying he should start the mutually assured destruction?
No, I don't think he should. But I'm like, if it's just one nuke and it was an accident or whatever, then like, you know, there was nothing that could be done with that. If Russia's about to start a full in like nuclear invasion on us and we are just like sort of trying to get ahead of that, I'm like, no, I'd actually just rather die in that.
I see. So you're saying,
like, he should not hit the button.
You're saying no. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. I'm voting no on hitting the button. Okay. Because I think if I'm going to die, I'd rather just die of the Russian nuke hitting me. I don't want to have to live in a world where all of these other areas are like,
okay,
ravaged by radiation poisoning.
Yeah. Rather than decimate the entire world.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good for you. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Thank God, honestly. No, I mean, no. That was like the interesting, that's like the frustration of the film is like, they're painting it as this like sort of, you have to do this whole show of force right now before we even know who did this or why, or run the risk of everyone using this opportunity to destroy us. It's like, yeah, that's imperialism. That's America and acceptable.
Yeah, it's like, I don't care that much about America. If, like,
right.
If right. if all of America gets destroyed, it's like, okay, you know what?
And we had it coming, I guess.
We, yeah. Well, it's like, we had a good run. You know, like, we weren't here for that long. There's no reason as to why we should continue forever. Like, at some point, I think America will come to an end, as every civilization has, you know? Like,
yeah.
And I would rather be instantaneously killed in a nuke than, like, dragged off someplace. But I guess I'm confused,
like, how you know that will happen. Like, how do you know?
Well, because I live in New York.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like,
okay.
So I'm like, second, if we're in, you're next. Yes. Yeah, so I'm like, okay. If we're in a nuclear war, I'm fairly certain I'm getting killed. Okay. Like, you know, I don't think I'm surviving a nuclear war if nukes are headed towards America.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's,
yeah,
and I'm honestly a little bit, I think in those last minutes of life, I'm sort of like, and why did they go for Chicago first? Like, sort of rude. They should have, like,
I mean, middle America.
That's New York is the best. Like, no, come for us. No. Like you should nuke trickle me
down,
first.
Trickle down warfare right there is nuking the middle of America. No, yeah. I think, I mean, that's what's a fun movie for me is if there's a conversation to be had. And so, like, I do think that this movie is probably going to get a lot more flack than it probably deserves, just as it exists as a sort of conversation piece. And I do think, yeah, I think the tension with which people respond to it is in itself telling of, like, how America, I don't know, is set to handle this sort of conversation. And so that in itself is fascinating. But I was interested in how so much of this cast is not American. It was like, I mean, everyone was hiding an accent left and right, you know? I think it was like Greta Lee was maybe the only one.
Yeah, and like Greta Lee, Tracy Letts is American, Anthony Ramos. That but, might be but it.
The four main, like Rebecca Ferguson, and then the two generals were both...
Yeah, Jared Harris is definitely British.
Yeah.
Jonah Howard King is British.
Yeah, and Idris Elba.
Idris Elba is British. Who is Gabriel Basso? I don't know. There's a lot of British people. Moses Ingram is in this. I forgot about her. Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of British people. Right. And then I was sort of like, was this filmed in America or was this filmed in, it was filming began in Trent, New Jersey. Okay. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And it filmed in like less than 2 months, which makes sense.
I mean, yeah, it's small set pieces, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
well, there's a lot of people just being in a room.
I did love, like, I feel like you get more hung up on like, oh, I need to know these characters, or you need more than I maybe do to connect to a character. Like, yeah, you know, the sick kid at home, done. I'm there. You know, I don't remember. Oh, your daughter is estranged, but you still want to talk to her. I can understand it. But the character note that I found like really fascinating and that I really wanted more of an understanding of was Greta Lee going to a Gettysburg reenactment on her day off. Like that was the one I wanted. I had a few questions. I wanted to understand it a little bit more there.
Because at first it was like, oh, she's like she's on a school trip or something. No,
just
like,
took her son on
but
her
then
day
it was
off.
Like, no, she just took her son to this Gettysburg reenactment. And then I was a little bit like, are there Gettysburg reenactments every day at Gettysburg? Or was this like a special thing? Because there were a lot of people there in Civil War attire.
I mean, the Civil War reenactment is just like wild. And then I'm like, I don't know dates, but I'm sure it's usually around the middle.
And then I'm like, okay, if you're a Civil War reenactor, like, is it like, are there people who are just like always Confederate and always Union, or does like everybody want to be Union?
There's
and
a whole
it's
chapter on reenactors.
On what book?
How the Word is Passed.
How
the
I don't
Word
know
is
what
Passed
is.
By Clint Smith. He like goes. It's about race history in the U.S. and this reporter goes through various like, American sites, and he ends up doing a big chapter on Civil War reenactments and kind of like how they became, one, normalized and popularized, and who participates in them now is crazy. It's absolutely bonkers. And honestly, I do think it works here in sort of this, like, why is America so obsessed with its, like, military history, even at its own detriment? Like, the Civil War is the most embarrassing thing to us, and yet we sort of, like, are sitting here glamorizing it. Like, it's crazy. We're, like, shooting ourselves, literally. And it's, like, entertainment. Well,
I find it sort of interesting from, like, just a, like, a, oh, like, what were battles like back then kind of a thing. But I am, like... Are people volunteering to be the Confederates, or do people like being the Confederates? Or and then I'm like, and what kind of person is that? Because you maybe that's kind of, like,
you know, well, exactly, right?
Yes, you know, and I do, but I'm like, maybe that's a good sort of litmus test of like, okay, if we need to be making some watch lists, like first up, anybody who volunteers to be a part of the Confederate War reenactments.
I
love when you have a character who's a minor character who has a really good sort of character note so that you can tell a lot about them in a short period of time. And I do think that some of these people had that, you know, like the guy who is not supposed to be, like, who's sort of like the assistant and then gets thrown into the role and is having to, like, run through the, like, I thought that he was really well written and very funny in a role that could have just been very boring and sort of, like, pass over. But I think what was maybe too obvious is that when you have 15 people of that, you can sort of, like, see the machinations working a bit more, where it's like, okay, all of them have to be, like, slightly quirky. All of them have to have, like, some sort of family member who's doing something that's just, like, a little bit interesting. It's like none of them were.
What do you mean?
Well, it's like they're all in some kind of a setting or have some sort of predicament outside of the government job that they have.
Yeah, that's life, Matt. People have family and friends. Yes, and
but to watch, like, when it's a script. Like, yes, of course, every character in every movie has, you know, is living 24 hours a day and is doing things or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But this felt like not necessarily like Manic Pixie Dream Girl, but like kind of like Odd Thing for Odd Thing's sake of, okay, like these are all sort of like bureaucrats doing office jobs for the most part. So their job isn't that interesting and doesn't provide that much character development outside of, you know, the plot involving the bomb. So we have to write up something for each one of these characters to do outside of that. And then because we only get to see each one of these characters for, you know, 5 minutes total, we can't just have it be that, oh, this person likes cooking or this person is married to a husband. Like, they have to be a little bit more specific to that than that, where it's like, oh, and this is the wife, but she's also interested in African elephants, and this is how she has a child, but it's a child at a Gettysburg thing that's going on. Or I don't like.
I mean, it's like, he has a pregnant wife. Oh, he wants to propose to his girlfriend. Like, yeah, why are these things just, like?
They're just. It's like there's everybody has to have something because of the way that the movie format is structured, and it was weird to watch it like this, and it felt a bit contrived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. I mean, is it just to, like, oh, everyone's married? Like, is it like you want justice for the singles? Or
no, it's just that, like, it's the same sort of plot structure repeated 15 times. So you can see it's sort of like Mad Libs a bit, where it's like, okay, person A with job A has a relative, pick one, who has a thing, pick, like, it. There's just.
Yeah, but it'd be the same if you and I were in an elevator with six people and it got stuck and we were told we have 5 minutes to live. And then we all had to choose like who to call, you know, or what person in the world we care most about. And so someone would call their sister and someone would call their grandma and some people would call their spouses or their children. So it's like,
right.
That's like but how it works.
But yes, but I think it would be weird to watch a movie that is just like the six people making these phone calls to like, it's just like, I understand that like, yes, this is what would happen in the real world kind of, but like, I also think that some of these people would just have like much more boring phone calls or boring people to talk to.
Yeah, like their fiance or their pregnant wife or their sick kid or their
okay. I don't
totally understand, but I'm yeah, I mean
it just felt like the same. It just felt like a lot of like copy paste with yeah. like I mean, slight
much
with like slight variations. And I just
But then your hang up is if they're too quirky. So if someone was like, oh, I have to let the circus know I won't be able to do my show Saturday.
That's why I think that the format doesn't work me. Because I'm like, because obviously if it was every single one of these people just called their wife who was someone who was sitting at home while their kids were at school, which is probably what is likely to be the case if, you know, it's a bunch of sort of rich, you know, government type people, that would be boring because the structure of the movie sort of lends itself to be boring that way. And so in order to try to zhuzh it up, you have to be like, okay, well, what if one of these people was actually at Gettysburg? And what if one of these people was actually blah, 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 blah. I wish that there were like less characters or, because I think if you have six people, like, not to keep going back to Vantage Point or whatever, but it's
love
like
your love of Vantage Point.
I mean, I watched Vantage Point since like 2008. So I don't know if it is a good, like, I'm sure that there are some political things with that because it takes place in the Middle East that would not hold up today. But I did really like it when it came out, and I do think it does a good job of like, of using that format where you're getting the same story multiple times and every time you're sort of getting a new, honestly, you know what? Not Vantage Point. Weapons, I think, is a better version of this where you have these characters that are all sort of entwined and you see them in different, like then the stories overlap, you're basically getting the same plot line a bunch of different times, but you're seeing it from different perspectives. You're getting new information. And I think Weapons does a good job of taking a character who's a side character in one scene and then giving them a more fleshed out backdrop in whatever their scene is. So it's like, oh, it's this homeless guy in, you know, the first round. But when you get to him, it gives him a little bit more humanity and a little bit more backstory. But I think when you only do that six times or however many times it does it in Weapons, people are more fleshed out. It's just, there's more
time. Yeah. There's more.
Right. Yeah.
Linear time.
So I think that's what I'm saying with this too, is like, I think that the woman who's like the Moses Ingram character, who's
the FEMA.
Yeah. Like the FEMA thing, like that. And then she is getting like carted out to the bunker system or whatever. Like that's a character who I feel like, okay, like, was it interesting sort of to see what FEMA would be doing in this? Yes. But like, did we need that? I don't know. Like, I think that there were just some other people who like you could have.
Yeah. I guess this is like,
been fine.
Yeah. It's like, it's a thought exercise. It's watching it happen. And if that's interesting to see how the government works, then it works. And if it's not, if you want like a more narrative, then yeah, there's definitely like holes or strains to this story as it is. Like maybe this is better as a, yeah, short story or, you know, like a short film. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, yeah, like, I guess I do think that this would work as if you had made this a short film and sort of just like took some like the president and a couple other people and like made it one of these rounds. I think it would be interesting. I don't know.
I just feel like we're set up to find movies like this dissatisfying because, yeah, there is an element of not being satisfied. You're not satiated in the end because you don't get the release, you know, you don't see what happens, you don't know the answers. And so you will always be left unsatisfied in a way. It's just deciding if that was worth it or not. And I think I appreciate what was attempted here. I think it worked, but I also am, I guess, not necessarily surprised that most people did not find it as entertaining as me.
There were pieces of it that I really liked. Yeah. And certain like characters or plot lines or whatever that I did find more compelling than others.
And I like her style. Like I like her sort of like, I think she is a very strong filmmaker and it's kind of a bummer how she doesn't necessarily, you know, get the same hype as, I mean, James Cameron, her ex-husband, who's like, you know, is on a different journey. Because, I think it was refreshing to kind of see her directing here. But it's a bummer. It's not something more accepted.
Yeah, I think her directing is always good.
Yeah.
I wish that my issue here is mostly with the script. Yeah, I think the acting is all pretty good. I think that like the editing and sort of the tautness of it works well and like is as interesting as it can be given the script. I just think that the script needed some zhuzhing.
Yeah.
Whether that be like I think that you can still do some like another movie that I think does something interesting with form is like Dunkirk, where you're seeing the same sequence of events, but like from what it's like shorter and longer periods of time or whatever. Like, I don't love Dunkirk. It's not my favorite movie. I think that movie I don't like as much just because the plot is sort of, it's kind of like it's a story that we know, have seen a bunch. But it's like, I think that there are ways that you can do things with form that are interesting and unique that also work really well. Or like, what was that movie that we saw last year with the girl with the like girl who's chasing the guy around or the guy who's chasing the girl around and you get them and it's like six chapters but you get them out of order. Strange Darling. Yes. Like I think there's lots of good movies that do things like that. So I wish that this had just, I don't know, that the writer had taken another 6 months to be like, okay, let's maybe like make this 10% better and then But I think audiences were always going to sort of hate this because of the ending, which I don't think that is something that needs to be changed or fixed or whatever. Because if Chicago does end up getting bombed, then you want to see a different movie, which is sort of about like, okay, well then what do you do after that? Yeah. And if Chicago, and if he nukes the entire world, then that's like a really depressing ending.
A real bummer.
And also you sort of want to see what happens after that. Yeah. So,
Catherine Bigelow, should she stop making these American military movies? You know, she did Point Break. Did you know that?
Yes.
Amazing. I did know that. Should she return to more neutral territory?
Well, it's like she clearly likes making these like action thriller kind of things, because even like Zero Dark Thirty is like that in that, you know, oh, like where is he? And then like, are we going to get him? And like,
how are we going to get him?
Yes. She likes these kind of like capers, if you will. So I kind of feel like, okay, maybe she needs to, I think that worked well for her a couple of times. And so now she's kind of stuck in this like this no man's land. But I think she either needs to move to something that's like primarily action, but like has an undertone of like some sort of message.
She should remake Vantage Point. and then you'll be satisfied. Well,
and unfortunately, I don't know if Vantage Point needs to be. Let me actually look up Vantage Point while we're here.
No one liked it.
Vantage Point came out in 2008. It did make a decent amount of money at the box office. Oh, and it has a certified rotten at 34% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. Vantage Point has an interesting premise that is completely undermined by fractured storytelling and wooden performances. Okay, you're not that I remember.
Yeah.
but CinemaScore gave it a B-, so people liked it.
Yeah.
Just critics didn't like it. I wonder what the Rotten Tomatoes audience score is. The people's house of dynamite, and that's what we all wish we had.
Yeah. Well, you do. Just rewatch Dennis Quaid's Vantage Point.
Who else is in that? I know Sigourney Weaver is in it. Oh yes,
Jack from Lost.
Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
See, a stacked cast. has William Hurt, Sigourney Weaver, and then a man who played the terrorist. Edward Ramirez is in there. Because there was a lot of Middle Eastern people.
General terrorist, number one.
Wait, did you know Zoe Saldana is in that movie?
Oh, that does. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen it since it came out. I don't know.
She plays someone named Angie Jones. Maybe that's what we should do next week, is a rewatch of Vantage Point. I'm sure it's held up well.
For sure. Yeah. I remember my dad liked it and I did not. So,
you know, another movie that I really liked that I feel like nobody else liked, now that I'm like, Source Code. Did you ever watch that?
Oh, yeah. You know I'm a Jake Gyllenhaal apologist.
Let's see what that. Oh, that has a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy to me.
That's the train one, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Where, spoiler alert, he was like in a bombing and now he's like in a vegetable or whatever. Yeah. And they like put his brain into this like replaying of a train bombing to have him figure out who it's going to be.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Yeah. Golden era. They just don't make them like they used to.
They really don't. Because this was also like Eagle Eye came out around this time. What are some other of those kind
of... Our fear of AI, and now look at us, taught us nothing.
What was the Russell Crowe one where he's like breaking his wife out of jail and they're in Pittsburgh? Do you know what I'm talking about? Breaks wife out of prison. The next 3 days came out in 2010. Let's see how that did well.
I remember Paycheck.
Oh, yes.
And then the Harrison Ford bank robbery one with Paul Bettany.
Harrison Ford. Bank robbing.
I quote it a lot because Paul Bettany.
Firewall.
Firewall. Yeah. He has some good lines in that. They're in the garage.
From 2006.
I watched that one a lot.
What is this genre of film? Like Payphone? Did you see Payphone? Or what was it, 88 Minutes with Al Pacino? That's another good one from that era. Mm-hmm. 2007 thriller.
Yeah.
Let's see what that one's Rotten Tomatoes score is. 5% on Rotten Tomatoes. Oof. 88 Minutes is a shockingly inept psychological thriller that expertly squanders the talent at hand. Wow.
I love a good squandering, though.
Sometimes. Oh, starring Lily Sobieski.
Oh. I don't think I ever saw that.
Perhaps her last role.
Sad.
Wow. Poor. She was in a film called American Girl that was filmed in Turkey. For some reason, in 2018.
I mean, Glass House, iconic.
Doesn't seem to be acting very much. I wonder what she's up to.
Yeah.
Were you there when she came into the office?
I do think so, because I was obsessed with, or someone told, I don't know. I can't remember. I do love Glass House and Deep Impact, so I feel like that would have made more of an impact, if you will.
Do you know what her stage name was?
No.
Lily Kimmel.
Ah.
Like what? Okay. Anyways. Well, that's enough of that. We have to get off because Shelby and I have to figure out what we're going to do about this nuclear weapon.
Yeah, that is headed we have towards 18 us. Minutes.
But yes, I'm going to call my friend who's a falconer and who I haven't spoken to in years. Shelby is going to take her daughter to the planetarium.
Oh,
that feels like something that could have been going on in this movie.
Yeah.
You're going to watch the stars as you die, sort of a don't look up kind of thing.
Gorgeous.
And then we'll be back next week to talk about Begonia, I think. I'm ready to break down Begonia.
Okay. I'll check my theaters.
There's really a 50-50 chance of it playing near you and then also a 50-50% chance of you hating it. So we'll never know. We will next week. But thanks everyone for listening and we'll see you guys then. Bye.